Good afternoon, folks. Here is Maurice Cerrone. We're on AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk in the Ahaney Manshaven radio studio. Welcome to the show today for all those of you out there. It's great to be with you. And I'll start right off by giving my regards to all the mothers that are listening, or who each and every one of you may have one that you've talked to recently. So it's a great day for them, a worldly thing as far as that goes, and celebrating the fine mothers of our environment that we live in. So it's a great day. It's nice to honor them with whatever means that each family has in honoring their mothers from that standpoint, along with phone calls and Texas Today and maybe Western Union and telegraph mechanisms, if you're still into that, various radio calls. Do call up and wish your mother a very happy day and enjoy the rest of the time with her as far as that goes. Yes, I am Maurice Cerrone from Ahaney Manshaven. We have two stores, our Tucson stores, at 1724 South 6th Avenue. It's 6 blocks south of 22nd Street, the big yellow building on the west side of the street as you approach 29th Street. It's between 27th and 28th Street. Our phone number on location is 520-624-7200. Our hours of operation are from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., Monday through Saturday. We have Memorial Day coming up shortly at the end of the month, and we will be closed, or we are going to be closed on that Monday and open up again on Tuesday. So we'll take the long weekend and celebrate Memorial Day as, or honor those individuals in Memorial Day as the time comes about. Our Green Valley location is at 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103. There's a famous Mexican food restaurant down in Green Valley called Manuel's. And as you walk out the front door, you could look right towards Ahaney Manshaven, a showroom that we have present in that area. Phone number there is 520-369-4858. Hours of operation are from Monday through Friday from 8:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. So if that is a closer area for you to conduct business with us on behalf of what you need to have accomplished in your home remodeling, yeah, please give us a call there or stop into the showroom, and we can assist you in many facets of your activities. A little bit of activities that are going on with Ahaney Manshaven presently. I know we've talked about countertops, and we'll continue to, because that is a mainstay of our portfolio. We are presently working about six templated countertops, where we identify those as the seamless corner type countertop, especially when we're working with a laminate type of production. So there are more and more people that are considering our store, our mill shop, our activity levels in order to produce those types of countertops. That's so they can get rid of the uneven splices as they start separating due to age and the expansion and contraction of those types of countertops as each home expands and contracts daily as a result of the expansion and contraction again of the woods that we use in order to form various activities. I'd like to talk a little bit about doors now. I'm going to back up a minute here. Our laminate countertops at Ahaney Manshaven, we can provide you a 12-foot countertop with an integrated backsplash, which is right established to the countertop itself, for $108. We do have all the other parts that you may need in order to complete the installation of that countertop. All our straight cuts are complimentary. The additional cost may be with the end capping, at least the materials, or we could do that for you, as well as cutting the miter cuts, namely 45 degrees, like in a 90-degree corner of your home, or 22 and a half if you happen to have some 45-degree corners. So give us a ring. Come down and take a look at the fine samples that we have. So that's a 12-foot countertop for $108. That's a pretty good purchase from that standpoint. We do carry 12-footers in stock, and that is far less than you'd pay for any natural stone or quartz-type countertop. Some of the activities going on at A Handyman's Haven, we're working a lot of doors presently. We do have a situation that where a customer has a door that exits out of the main part of the home and goes into a swimming pool area, and it's been very interesting. I'd like to say that I knew where everything is supposed to be and how it needs to be constructed, but there always seems to be something that comes along the line that enters into the picture. And this happens to involve the 2018 International Residential Building Code, of which I found out just recently that all governmental entities have basically accepted the code with amendments that need to take place. And my understanding is that the International Building Code is what's subscribed to. However, the governmental entities, due to the amendment process that's available, can be establishing stronger restrictions on various types of the codes. But one code that came to a light this past week is an individual is interested in purchasing what we call doors that exit the main part of the home and goes into a swimming pool area. And those doors do have some special requirements. One main requirement is that the door needs to be a self-closer. This implies that the sliding glass door should have a self-closer on it. And if it's a swinging type door, it also needs to have a self-closer on it. So one thing that we may not recognize is that many homes today have self-closers on one specific door in their home, and that is a door that exits the home and goes into a garage. And that door is required by code to have a self-closer. There's two methods of doing that, so to speak, not discussing an electronic method. But from a mechanical standpoint, you can have self-closers on the top of the door generally, very similar to what we see on many commercial doors. They're pretty big and bulky. They do perform extremely satisfactorily in all instances. And then the other type of self-closer that's a little nicer to the eye, so to speak, is an adjustable spring hinge. And normally those doors will have two adjustable spring hinges on them. And what we mean is that the hinge has a very bulky barrel. And within that barrel structure itself, you can set the amount of tension you need in order to have the door automatically close for you. That is a requirement. Also on pool doors, there is a safety issue involved with young children, which happens many times, unfortunately, throughout the year. I can say that we've had situations in our own personal life with a young child slipping into pool and fortunately being saved without any damage being done to the human body, or the brain, or whatever it may happen to be. Well, it looks like we've come upon our first break at this time period. So our production engineer is John Couch again, and it's nice to have him here and discuss various aspects of our activities. We are on AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk. And John, take it away. I've got the power, and welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show, AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk. I am Maurice Cerrone from A Handyman's Haven. If you'd like to enter into the discussion today with the topics or any other topic that you may have of interest on a personal nature, give us a call here at the radio studio where we're transmitting from today on 520-790-2040. We've been talking about doors and the pool area that many homes have, where you exit the house and go into your swimming pool situation. So that door itself, as we discussed a little earlier, needs to have self-closers on it in order to protect the youth that may roam around the house and all of a sudden find themselves out in the backyard where the swimming pool is. Of course, we all know today that there needs to be a fence around the pool of about 4 feet high, which is required by code as far as new construction goes. The unfortunate part of that is that the some homes are grandfathered in, and it's up to the personal homeowner to provide a new fence if they so desire. A lot of that is also true on doors. But today, when you order a brand new door that goes into a pool area, by permit or code, it is going to be required that you have a self-closer on the door, as well as the latching mechanism needs to be mounted higher than what your normal latching mechanisms are on a standard door, or a typical door, I should say. So typically we measure from the top of the door down to where the main latch is, and that seems to be somewhat characteristic to be at 44 inches from the top of the door. And that latch is the one that we normally go in and out of the home or room or whatever it happens to be at 44 inches from the top of the door. The deadbolt, as most of us know, is at 39.5 inches from the top of the door. However, when it comes time for the second latch, sometimes it's referred to as the deadbolt because it is the upper latch on a typical door, that it's measured from the floor to the center of the latch, and that is 54 inches from the floor. So 54 inches from the floor itself up to where this secondary latching mechanism needs to be is about 4 feet, 6 inches. So why do I bring that up? Well, when the controversy come up working with the customer at the store, I started doing some background information. I called our door supplier company and asked them where they put that so-called second bore. And they said, well, we put it wherever you tell us to put it. So that was, I thought, pretty interesting that they did not have a designated time. And I asked them if they knew about the code and complied with it. They said, well, everybody seems to have a different place on where they want it. So therefore, the customer tells us, which I am a customer to them, on where my customer would like to have that deadbolt or latch mechanism. So anyway, one of my grandsons is about 4 feet tall, and when my son, the general manager of the store, went home and took him and put him by the door where they have a latch on the door. They don't have a swimming pool, by the way, but they have an upper level latch in order to control children just walking in and out of the home at any time period. He could reach well up to 54 inches. So he's about 4'4", 1'2" tall, and his reach is going to be in excess of 6 inches. They happen to have a knob, which is a round circular type or cylinder type of latch. And that in itself means that he has to twist this knob. Well, he didn't have the strength to twist the knob, and not that it's hard, but he's extending now out at the full length of his arm trying to grip this knob and try to twist it, but he wasn't able to twist it. So that provided a little bit of security, but now the question comes, is 54 inches an adequate height for children? And this young lad is about 7 years old. So I don't think he's taller for his age, but it demonstrates that a family needs to be well aware of the situation as far as safety. So with an automatic closing system and have the latch high enough that where the young child cannot get to it. The second thing that was very enlightening to me that I always thought it would be a deadbolt. There's two types of deadbolts, by the way. There's what we call a single cylinder deadbolt, which means on most of our homes at least, you put your key in from the outside as you get ready to enter the house and twist the deadbolt. And it's not a self-flexing type latch that's on that type of a deadbolt. It's actually fixed. You're actually rotating a hard cylindrical device that extends out. And it doesn't, if that's out when you try to close your door, you're going to bang your jamb pretty heavy and could either break the door and end up breaking the jamb or the framework that holds the door in position. So it isn't a type of door that's spring-loaded in when you try to close the door, which most home household doors or home doors are, whether it goes to a bedroom, the bathroom, or whatever it happens to be. You just push it and it closes as the latch slides in and then slides back out and latches appropriately. So the information that I've located is that the deadbolt is not supposed to be put at the top. It's supposed to be a regular latch. So what some people do is that they switch the position of this typically mounted deadbolt and latch itself. Well, that only puts it, 39 inches, so to speak, down from the top where you put the latch. You subtract that from 80 inches, which is the height of the door, typically speaking. And that little subtraction technique would be, most of us know, about 41 inches. So it's not 54 inches. So that in lies one of the major difficulty for those people who end up just switching where the latches go and try to put a latch mechanism in where the existing deadbolt is and it's not high enough off the floor. So this becomes a major concern. We did have a customer a while back that was purchasing deadbolted doors, so to speak, for daycare centers, and he was placing them 48 inches up off the top of the floor. Again, that does not comply with code, because code requires 54 inches from the floor to the center of the locking mechanism. So anyway, we're going to position the so-called bore, which technically today requires a latch, and which is a standard latch that you enter in and out of most doors with, 16 inches down from the top of the door. That's going to place it about 66 inches from the bottom of the door. So that puts it that where you're going to need probably a 5-foot person, as we normally figure out the height of our offspring, and then plus his reach. And it should be a knob, probably, so to speak, instead of a lever. A lever means that even in my case, the grands would be able to reach up and pull the lever down if it's not locked, because that's a spring-loaded operation, and open the door. So those are some safety considerations with swimming pools in order to protect our youth as they roam in and out of the houses. Another way that a lot of them are done, and I did contact a door company or a swimming pool company as an example, and they said, well, wherever the customer wants to put it, that's where we suggest that they put it. And most customers are probably not aware of this requirement from that standpoint. So keep that in mind, folks. Do protect your youth. If you have a swimming pool in the background, with the appropriate fencing, as well as getting in and out of the house. If anybody has any questions concerning this, please give us a call. You could direct yourself to the IRC 2018, which happens to be the International Residential Code, and we'll be able to go in there and try to find out what takes place. So when we talk about safety features of that nature, another item comes into play is what about windows and egressing a home. And that was an interesting situation. I have become familiar with that from years past. And when we talk about things of this nature, many of us do lock up our homes accordingly. And we do have an automatic device on it if you have a security system. And with that being in mind, and I'll digress back to the previous discussion in this case, that there are automatic security systems that can be placed on a sliding glass door or a swinging door that lets you know if the door opens. I know that the security system in my home is that we can load it in that where if any time the door is open or closed, it'll ring a bell, not really a bell, but sound a buzzer, letting us know that somebody has gone in and out of a exterior door in our home, and this in itself would be alert. The only difficulty that I see with this type of a system on a door where you have this, the safety of an individual involved is that are you able to get to that door that has been opened fast enough if you happen to have a swimming pool in the backyard? Young people are rather physically sound enough and extremely dexterous in that climbing any sort of fence may be relatively easy for them. I know that we've had a couple climbers in our house, and I don't even think a 4 or 5 foot fence would have prevented them from getting over the top of it. It's going to have to be one of these great walls that maybe China built years ago in order to prevent that from happening. So again, when we get involved with the security of the homes and things of that nature, there is a lot of controversy out there and the safety of the home itself. So another item I like to talk about when we talk about safety happens to do with habitable areas of the home. And you can go on the web at a website that did discuss this quite regularly. It would be egresswindows.com. And this is every habitable portion of a home generally should have an escape mechanism or route that where I shouldn't necessarily say a route, but be able to get out of the habitable area, especially when many homes or many rooms in a home are homes that are slept in. And if something happens, how do you get out of the house? How does that person get out of the home itself? Many homes only have two doors. They have what's called a front door, or they have what we label as a back door, side door, etc. And that happens to be an area of the home that could be a laundry area, it could be part of the kitchen, it could be a mudroom, or whatever it happens to be, and may not be in the vicinity of the bedrooms. And that's where we're being asleep at nighttime, and when something occurs, do we have the sanity to know where we're going to go or how we're going to get out of the home? So I'm going to leave that little teaser there as we come upon our second break, transmitting on AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk. And John, please take it away. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. And John, that's great bumper music. I really appreciate that. We're in the A. Handyman's Haven Radio Studio, transmitting on AM 1030, The Voice, with trusted local news and talk. So we've been talking a little bit about safety features. Just like to emphasize, folks, if you'd like to call in today and enter into the discussion, you're invited to do that on 520-790-2040. So we're talking about ingressing and egressing, mainly egressing the home when we have a breach of security or a fire security situation that does occur. Fires are not fun, folks, as we well know, and even a small little flash fire on the top of the stove can be just detrimental to everybody involved. So when it comes to doors, as an example, or rooms in a home, any habitable area, especially the sleeping area, should have within its reach a egress system from that standpoint. And there are some specific requirements. Unfortunately, many homes today, of which a lot of us purchase, are older homes. And if they are not complying with the code structure, then they may not have the appropriate ingress or egress. Any home that is being modified, and to what extent, I can't tell you, but if a permit's required on a certain thing, or you're going to add a certain home or a certain room, whatever it may happen to be, your house may need to be brought up to code in order to comply with this. So from a habitable area, from that standpoint, in the bedroom area especially, you need a 5.7 square foot egress area in order to comply with the code. And this would be code, residential code 310, which is one that I located. And you can review some of this information if you so desire on the egresswindows.com from that standpoint. And that will give you some of the things that I'm talking about presently today. So along with that, if there's a sliding window involved, then that would provide the opening from that area. The minimum width of the opening has to be not less than or not smaller than 20 inches. The minimum height of the opening needs to be greater than 24 inches. So it needs to be the width greater than 20 inches and the height greater than 24 inches to comply with the 5.7 square feet. So that's easily accomplished, especially in newer homes when the windows are specifically designed from that standpoint. So keep that in mind when you accomplish things of that nature. The other thing that's pretty interesting is if you don't have that because you have an older home, is what are you going to inform your offspring as to what they may need to do if it is a long distance to get to the exit areas of the home. It may be that the secondary exit, which would be not the front door, is farther away than the primary exit would be your front door. What is the footage? How long does it take? And this is what the other thing that I'd like to talk about is that there is some discussion between the security people and between the fire suppression people, you know, the fire departments and things of that nature. So the fire department says that the doors cannot have a double-cylinder deadbolt on the door. So if you have a standard latch on the door, most latches that I know of today, even though that you turn that little flip knob in the center and lock the door at nighttime, you can press down on a latch and the door will automatically open. The other interesting thing is you have to be careful with that if you do shut the door after that, you may lock yourself out of the house because not all latches are capable of staying unlocked when you energize it from the inside. I know that I've got one like that at home, and I can tell you from my personal experience that I had to break a window to get back into the house because the door locked me and I did not have an outside key. Okay, what does an outside key mean? Well, you can hide a key someplace, and if you use the typically places where people may hide keys, guess what? The burglar that comes along may know what it is. So anytime that you do have a fire in a house and smoke is all over the place, you scoot along the floor as an example because that's where the smoke is not going to be settling, assuming it's not too dense. And get to your door, then according to the fire people, you can reach up and grab the lever and pull the lever down, which is a lot easier to do than trying to turn a knob. And maybe that should be, you should change all the latches out of your homes to levers so you have an ease of movement and get outside. Of course, what's the other thing that occurs? Most front doors, as an example, to the homes or most doors at homes that are exit doors, open to the inside. So that means you got to move out of the way now as you try to open the door, and all this takes time. Should you have an outswinging door, that's going to be a personal personal decision on behalf of the homeowner, so you can move right out. The other thing that you should do, and this is especially true if you're in hotel rooms, which they do have fire-rated doors on each hotel room, is put your hand up against the door and see how hot it is or how cold it is. And if it's really hot on the other side of the door, you could believe that the door is going to be pretty hot and there's a big fire going outside or smoke of some fashion. And maybe that's not the way you want to go. So be careful in opening doors that happen to be hot when you touch them. So keep that in mind. Now, when it comes to security, the security people indicate that maybe you ought to have a double-cylinder deadbolt that where you require a key on the inside to unlock the deadbolt, and also a key on the outside to unlock the deadbolt. Well, the fire people don't think this is smart because they're going to say, well, where do you keep the key? Or how do you get the key into the slot? Well, in our home, as an example, I do have double cylinders. And the other thing from a security standpoint is if you have a glass window or some way that you could break the window and reach around and grab the single cylinder deadbolt and twist that knob, that rectangular knob, now you've got the door open. And that will be a great exit to move all the stuff that they want in and out of the house appropriately. A lot of people today are putting 42-inch wide doors in the front from their front door, And this gives a tremendous escape route for anything that anybody wants to move in and out at a rapid pace. So these are some of the anomalies that are associated with safety features when it comes to the door. So anytime that you have glass within on arm's reach of the single cylinder deadbolt, somebody could break that glass, then reach their arm in there and twist the knob, open up the front door and get out. If there's a lever there or a knob, they can turn the knob and lever and the door opens right up. So what we do in our home is that doors that are in the habitable area when we're sleeping, we have a key available that we can slip into the dead cylinder deadbolt, and that way we know that we can twist that relatively easy and get out into the exit area that we need to be for safety from a fire, and hopefully breathe sufficient clean air to keep our lungs cleared out from that standpoint. Coming back to the windows now, you have to have an escape route that doors are considered a typical escape route if you happen to have a door in an area where your bedrooms are. However, think about the security system of those and what you may have to apply in order to get a good, safe environment for your home, as well as safety features at night while you're sleeping. Which brings up an interesting thing, that if you do not have a door relatively available to exit the house from a sleeping area, you may want to think about having some breaking mechanism available. And what's normally available in most bedrooms is a chair. And so, therefore, you can take your chair and bang it up against the window itself and break it. All the glass should be flying to the outside, and you can get out. Well, I could share a little bit of experience with you in that when we're out there flying commercial airliners, as an example, and we have that locked door in the front where the pilots up front are secured in a very, very secure environment, that getting out of that door sometimes may be a rather difficult with what take place. So we have what we call a big, huge, great fire axe that's situated in all the cockpits. And the pilot that becomes free first can grab that fire axe and smash the door and get out of there as fast as he can if they happen to have an emergency landing or whatever happens to take place. So this is thought of with all the aviators that are flying commercial airliners or passengers today in order to give the proper egress from the cockpit. So keep that in mind, folks, from that standpoint. You may want to think about your glass in the windows, even though it's not required, become tempered glass. And that way, when you do break that glass to exit the home, and it's not required, as far as I know, that it'll break into little popcorn pieces, and therefore you're not going to have big shards you have to break through. Whether you're going in or out, or the security I shouldn't say the security, but the fire department people have to come in, because I'll guarantee you that they'll break the glass in order to get all the emergency equipment that is hanging on their back into the home so they can fight the fire appropriately from that standpoint. We talked about garage doors a little bit. A 20-minute fire-rated garage door is required with automatic closers on it. And with that being in mind, when you go to sell your home, depending upon the age of it, I'm sure the inspector may or may not require the labeling. That label is a metal label that has to be applied to the door. It's normally applied on the hinge side. With that is the fabricator that supplied the door to the location it's at. That plate will also have a number on it, which is a serial number, which will be situated at the Warney or the Warnock Hershey security system, who keeps a record of all this. And if you do happen to have an insurance claim because you happen to have a fire in your garage that entered into your home, this is probably going to be one of the areas that your insurance company is going to look at, is if you had a fire-rated door that's appropriately labeled and registered along with the automatic closing devices operational from that standpoint. With big insurance claims that come about as a result of fires in the homes, obviously the insurance companies consider that because, as we all know, we pay a lot of insurance premiums, but they may not be interested in reimbursing us for problems of this nature. Well, our third segment is over with, folks, on AM 1030 The Voice with trusted local news and talk. And our production engineer, John, is ready with his touchy fingers, and we'll see you after the break, folks. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I'm Maurice Cerrone from A&E Men's Haven. We're transmitting in AM 1030 The Voice with trusted local news and talk. Our store in Tucson is situated at 1724 South 6th Avenue, six blocks south of 22nd Street, the big yellow building. Our Green Valley store is situated at 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103 Alpha. The phone number on location there is 520-369-4858. I'm going to talk a little bit now about baby boomers. We have a few minutes left in the show today. If you do like to enter the conversation, please give us a call at 520-790-2040. Baby boomers. The characteristic of baby boomers are individuals today that are living at 55 years old and plus. The era, so to speak, that is labeled as baby boomers would be from 1946 to 1964, if you were born during that time period. And one of the surveys that I have seen recently, which is pretty interesting, is what do these homeowners really want in a home? So there's been some statistics out of individuals in the last 3 years that have been surveyed in order to see what they're purchasing, what they're requesting, and how they're settling into the home as far as that goes. Most baby boomers, as we know today, are reaching somewhat a retire age. I don't know what era that I'm in, by the way, but that's beside the point from this standpoint. But my philosophy, so to speak, is I'm purchasing a home on what I think is what I need in order to live and raise a family and et cetera. So, in making this decision and survey, if it was essential, the essential things that they, baby boomers, are unlikely to buy a home without some sort of feature. And features could be anything. It could be a kitchen. It could be multiple bathrooms. It could be a laundry room. It could be a mud room. It could be a garage or whatever it may happen to be, a carport, and et cetera. So that would be the essential portion when they answer these questions. The questions that was posed to them was about 175 different features that they could make a decision on whether it was essential as the lead one. The next one was desirable. This was items of these features that were seriously influenced for them to buy a home. I do know that some time ago in the home that I was willing to sell, that one customer came in and he was extremely excited about a home because there's a feature of the home whereby there is an additional entrance and it entered into an area that could be secured from the main part of the home when his clients wanted to come in and he wanted to establish a home office. So that was a feature that was extremely important to him. So out of these 175 features, their answer could have been indifferent. In other words, would not influence the purchase of the home decision whether they had it or not had it, such as a special laundry room or a special media room or a pantry, et cetera. And then items that they did not want out of the 175 features, and that meant that they were not likely to buy a home with this feature. So those were the four major categories that they used for this. So the interesting thing about it, the baby boomers, that's 55 years old and older as of today, laundry room, 94% of the people that are in the baby boomer era were interested in having a laundry room. Now, I have to say that sometimes the laundry room, it could either be a large room, it could be a small room. I know the laundry room that we presently have in our home, you're doing good to get one person in there. It is so small from that standpoint. It not only houses the central air conditioning unit, it houses a hot water heater, and it also houses a washer and dryer, along with cabinetry and a hanging device so you can hang some clothes for drying. So it's pretty well compact. 91% of the baby boomers are looking for Energy Star rated windows. So some windows are Energy Star rated. That would definitely mean that there are double glass windows on the exterior of the home. And the interesting thing about that is that the heat loss and heat gain of a home doesn't go horizontal to the great extent, but 80% of it goes vertically. So in reality, your ceiling should be Energy Star rated in one way, shape, or form, because that's where 80% of your heat loss is going to go, because guess where heat rises in a home when you heat it? It goes vertical. And guess what happens in the hot sun out here in the Tucson area during the summer months that's approaching us, that the heat comes in from the roof. So one ought to consider that on the expenditure and doing various things of that nature. Appliances. Any Energy Star rated appliances are definitely important, because that chews up a lot of energy when the refrigerator doors are open and closing and you're running a lot of washers and dryers and et cetera. And 90% of the baby boomers were requesting Energy Star appliances. Anytime you replace appliances today, there's a good possibility that all of them are Energy Star rated. Even hot water heaters from that case are Energy Star rated, especially if they're electric accordingly. A patio. 90% of the baby boomers are requesting a patio as far as the home that they purchase. Ceiling fans. I thought this was pretty interesting, because ceiling fans are important to the extent that they keep the air circulating. 88% of the baby boomers were requesting, were very essential as far as ceiling fans go. And ceiling fans are extremely valuable when you're in the room itself. If you're outside of the room, running the ceiling fan is a waste of energy. So keep that in mind when you're controlling your ceiling fans. You can put ceiling fans on a rheostat, as an example, as well as a standard on-off switch if you so desire. Ceiling fans are reversible in their rotation, and so you can operate them in one direction with the appropriate blades situated. They're like a propeller on an airplane, except the propeller or the ceiling fan blades are not adjustable. They're fixed. So the way they get the change of airflow is by reversing the polarity of the motors that operate that. So in one time period, they'll operate counterclockwise as you look at it. The other way, when you look at it, it'll be clockwise. So keep that in mind from that standpoint. Garage storage. So when they indicate garage storage, I would assume that they would like to have a garage. And so close to 90% of the baby boomers are requiring a garage with adequate garage storage. Exterior lighting. As most of us know, that's very, very important. And how do you get to your exterior lighting? Or today, is it motion sensitive as far as on-off goes? I know that in our home, for our exterior lighting, it is motion sensitive in certain cases. And in other cases, we have three switches available. It's on a four-way switching system that will turn on all the exterior lights to light up if we happen to see some activity. And one sensational activity we heard one time period was a lot of pounding going on around the house, and we turned on the lights and we saw three horses run through our yard. And I thought that was very, very interesting. I hope they didn't go off of any of the slopes that we had and end up breaking any legs, but I didn't find them the next morning hanging around any place. On two-story homes, 86% of the people were requiring a full bath on the main level. And that was very, very important. So if you do have a two-story home, it's even good to have even a powder bath, a powder room, because you have your guests. Otherwise, your guests will have to climb to the second floor. That's pretty typical of many, many homes. I was living in a home at one time period where the second floor had two bedrooms, and on the second floor were two full baths. And I thought that was very, very unusual. So a full bath on the main level is very, very important for the people. So we'll discuss some more of this next week. We're coming upon the end of the show, folks. It's great being with you. I'm Maurice Cerrone from Ahenny Man's Haven. We're transmitting on AM 1030 The Voice with trusted local news and talk. And happy Mother's Day to every one of you out there. If a mother is not listening, make sure the male component is wishing that upon their mother of their children. Thank you very much, and we'll see you next week.